Welcome, y'all, to the Direct Examination Podcast. My name is Amber Former.
And I'm Dane Phillips.
And I'm Joseph Bias. Ladies and gentlemen, we have three co-hosts here. We have an intern here. What's up, Denison?
Hey, guys.
We have a producer here.
A volunteer intern. Who would have thought?
On his spring break.
On his spring break coming in, we have Brindy, our super producer. Hi, Brindy.
Hello.
We have our guest today, and ladies and gentlemen, none of us had to bribe our way into college. So shout out to us. We did great, guys. Woo! We did good.
We straight made the West Columbia.
That's right.
Straight out of Batesburg, Louisville.
That's right. Columbia, South Carolina representing. And speaking of Columbia, South Carolina, boy, doesn't our guest have something to do with Columbia, South Carolina? Dane?
Strong ties to the community.
Look at you like that segue? That's a season two segue. Season one, I couldn't have pulled that off.
Seamless.
Thank you.
Our guest today is the esteemed judicial part of the Magistrate Court of Richland County. It's Daniel Coble. He's the Associate Chief Magistrate Judge for Richland County. He serves full-time in Central Court, located over there at Decker Boulevard. It's the Taj Mahal of Richland County.
If you haven't the best courthouse.
It really is now.
I wasn't joking. I mean, if you haven't been there, it's like a federal courthouse. The jury box has individual monitors. It's perfect. It's a great courthouse. It's just too bad we don't have more trials there.
That's right.
Because there's so many courtrooms.
We're ready for you.
Yeah, I think if you're listening to this and you're not a lawyer, you probably don't want to see that courthouse.
Yeah, like I'd rather not visit.
Right.
So he handles criminal and civil trials, mediations, preliminary hearings, traffic court, domestic violence court, and landlord-tenant court. He had previously worked as the prosecutor for the Fifth Judicial Circuit. He handled a wide range of cases, including burglary, robbery, DUI and DUAC, and drug cases. Only convicted guilty people, no innocent people.
Of course.
Only a true minister of justice. And then as a prosecutor, he also worked with Nelson Mullins, the public defender's office, and of course, Chief Municipal Judge Dana Turner in establishing South Carolina's first homeless court, which has been integral as far as changing essentially the revolving door that we've had at Alvin S. Glenn Detention Center. And it's an absolute great thing that we've added in Richland County. And I didn't realize you were part of that, but thank you so much, because anybody that's had any involvement with magistrate and municipal court in Richland County or really anywhere, but specifically in a metropolitan area, homeless court is absolutely needed. It's these are the people that get it taken advantage of by the society the most, helpless in many ways, and mental illness and intellectual disabilities, and substance abuse. But bottom line is, it's a great thing. I'm glad, if you want to talk about that at all, you certainly can. But also, the most notable thing that he's had recently is he is the author. We have a bona fide
published author today. Mm-hmm. God, we're moving up in the world.
He's the author of Everyday Evidence books. And he's here to talk about, essentially, because he has several series of books. It's not just one book. He is a notorious author.
That's right.
I brought multiple. Him to give to
And he even, brought, he even so has excited. Gifts for it.
Well, I've learned to butter up the interviewers. So.
Speaking of bribery, we have lots of free books.
And you can find Everyday Evidence at the website everydayevidence.org. And he's going to talk to us about that.
Yes, absolutely.
So welcome Google. The Honorable Daniel Coble.
Well, welcome. thank you all for having me here. I've been a fan of the podcast since it came out. I went back. I didn't realize till halfway through, so I had to go back and listen to all the podcasts. They're fascinating. Learned a lot. Especially the one with Mr. Ducati.
Nice. Yeah, well.
The reason that it stuck out to me so much is because one of my friends worked at his previous law firm, and we were in a group text, and one of my friends started asking the other about this, and it was the whole story made no sense to me the way they were talking. And
right.
So I kind of ignored it and forgot about it. And then all of a sudden he's on this podcast, and I said, right. I gotta know, who this guy is and his story. And so, it was fascinating.
Well,
and so
we're news makers. We break news, obviously now.
Win elections.
Yeah, we win elections. Yep. We and now we're selling books. So
man,
tell us about, so we'll talk about your background for a sec. So you were a prosecutor for a bit. You started the homeless court. So Dane told us a little bit about that. Tell us about kind of how that idea came to, why did you want to get involved in that, and kind of tell the people who don't know what homeless court is.
All right, so I was an assistant solicitor here in Columbia for 5 years, and back in 2013, Nelson Mullins, Judge Turner, the Public Defender's Office, Appleseed, Sue Berkowitz, they had the great idea of establishing South Carolina's first homeless court. It first began in the late 80s in San Diego. Steve Bender was a public defender, well-known, well-respected, who helped put it together, has a long story of helping homeless folks. And so they did all the legwork, the front work. I came in because they needed a prosecutor, and Dan Johnson. I know he has a lot of issues, but one of the things he did well was these alternative courts. He supported these courts, and this is one he put me in charge of.
Because there's also like a veterans court.
Veterans, mental health, drug court, right. Youth.
I mean, we're not all defined by the worst thing we've ever
done. As coming from a defense attorney, you're absolutely right. Then. And that is true.
Dave has that tattooed on his chest.
And it's a good motto to live by. And so the homeless court, we started that. It began back around 2013. And the reason it's such a great court is because, and it's different from every other diversionary court, is because the normal way it works is someone gets in trouble and they go to the court or the PTI diversionary program. And they have to complete a set of obstacles, right. You know, and go through it all and prove to the court that they are doing what's right, or they're held accountable and their charges are hanging over their head. Homeless court works so great is because it's folks who have already, who've had old bench warrants, old fees and fines established with these municipal and magistrate courts that have kind of messed up their life. Right. And what they've done is they've transitioned out of a homeless lifestyle. They're either out of homelessness, or they have a job, or they're working their way out. And they come to the court and they say, hey, I've done X, Y, and Z. They'll bring certificates. A lot of times they have framed certificates of completing drug classes,
wow.
Job training programs. And they say, I did this. Can you help me out? You know, a lot of times there was one lady who she had done everything right. And because of some old fines, she couldn't get her nursing license. And so at one of the homeless courts, we accepted her in. Judge Turner graduated her. And she was able to become a nurse. And that was written up in the Free Times. And so it's a lot of great stories about, you know, it's pure America. It's giving people a second chance.
Life-changing.
They do the right thing, and they get credit for it. That's not always the case in the criminal justice system, as everyone is aware. And so you like to see when that actually happens. And so that's how homeless court started. I enjoyed that. And it was it couldn't have been done without the other parties involved.
Now, that kind of leads us to how you got to your current role as the Associate Chief Master Judge. But I have to ask you, you saw it on our little outline before the podcast started, and where my question is, what significance does July 18th, 2017? So I'm asking you, I'll be right, because I told you I wouldn't let you guess beforehand. Do you know what day that is?
I have no idea. Is it a Tuesday?
In case anyone wanted to know, July 18th, 2017 is the official City of Columbia Daniel Coble Day.
Yes.
Really? There you go.
Well, that was a significant day for obvious reasons. We celebrate it once a year, as you can tell.
Right, right.
No, but
we will celebrate it on this podcast every year.
That'll be the new holiday. I'll take work off.
There we go.
No, I do. That was very significant to me because it was a surprise. It had to do with homeless court. It was put together by George Coffin of Nelson Mullins, and Judge Turner and everyone was there, and it was. It was right after, so yeah, that's right, because I had just been sworn in July 4th, a couple weeks before, and so it was kind of my going away gift.
This is my gotcha journalism. This is
gotcha. You got me.
I had so many more worse questions, but then you brought us gifts, and we're talking about how much you like the pod. So.
This isn't my first interview. Right?
Scratch them all. Yeah.
I know what I'm doing here. So.
Your strategy is working.
It's either
so
books
well.
Or cash, so yeah, I went right. with the books.
I prefer books.
So we got plenty.
We need to talk if you want. Yeah.
But that was a significant day because it brought attention to the court and I remember describing it in an article about it being a three-legged stool. That was you had to have, if it hadn't been for Dino, your former colleague.
Sure.
Shout out to Dino. Yeah. Dino, who's an amazing lawyer. Dino,
amazing attorney. He and I had our fights, and he always won, and I always learned from him. But he was great at the homeless court and going the extra mile to help folks. Judge Turner was perfect for that position and helped create establishing it as the judge. And George Cawthon and Nelson Mullins were very good in keeping it going because it was up and down.
Well, Judge Coba, I think the question that everyone's now thinking, anyone who's listening to this podcast, and of course everyone in this room.
Is this another gotcha?
No. What do we need to do to get Direct Examination Day recognized by the City of Columbia? Like, how can we? We'll talk about it after the podcast. But I'm just saying,
everybody, I have some ideas.
Let's get the.
We have to get wheels on the to turn. Top 50 most influential.
Yeah, we want to be on the Power 50 of the free time.
This is really easy.
Do you have some extra books that we can
the books start giving out to people?
This is real easy. Just invite Mayor Benjamin on your next podcast.
All right,
and say it's
say Mayor
Steve, yeah, we're listening.
Mayor, you're running for a re-election at some point. We're gonna. Let you back on here. Yeah, it would be great.
Y'all have already won one election, apparently. So.
That's
two.
Right.
Multiple.
No, two, yeah.
We got two.
Dick Harpootlian and Byron Gibson.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, two for two.
Well, I guess if I ever run for anything, this is where I announce.
Hey, this will be your... Hey,
well,
we're going to hold you to it.
I did run for city council.
Did you announce it on the pod?
And that's why I lost.
All right, there we go.
Now we know why. I always wondered why.
Power of the pod.
I'm just saying, you know, and look, you're on now. You're a published author. You're a judge. Things are going
You'll
well
for you. You'll be Chief Justice before you
know. Yeah, that's right.
Well,
maybe we're going to have Spain's retired. We're not owning anybody.
Yeah, we're not breaking that news.
No.
I'm going to have an email from court administration tomorrow morning.
Right. That's right.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, well, we do know the Supreme Court listens. I mean, we've had Justice View on the podcast.
Well, now I'm nervous.
Well, tell us about everydayevidence.org.
Well, the way it started was about a year ago, and I have to correct you. I'm not a published author yet. These are self-published, and
self-published.
So I'm working with the South Carolina Bar to publish a book called Pocket Prelims, and hopefully it gets published. They've been great. They've been working with me the past year, and so I've always done preliminary hearings, and Dane, I've seen you in there as well, but as a solicitor, but as a judge, there's so many issues that come up. It could be absolutely any issue in a criminal case. And so I started writing down notes, and it just got kind of confusing. And I said, let me just organize these notes. And that turned into more notes, more rules, more cases. And so I said, let me just put this into a book with it. And then I said, you know, maybe this will be useful. And I sent it to, and actually after that, I wrote the Everyday Evidence book, which is a book on the rules of evidence. And I sent that out, and the bar said, we like the prelims one, the evidence one, it's okay. but they like the prelims one, so hopefully that will come out soon as a published book. And
wow, that's great.
And so the way that started, so then I did the evidence book as well, and I was holding on to it. And the way the evidence book came along was I couldn't tell you a single thing that Professor Flanagan taught me in law school about evidence. He was a great professor, but you lose it,
sure.
And it's complicated, and so. I had a rules of evidence printed out. You know, you have all the books out there, but at the solicitor's office, and I would write little notes to explain it in layman's terms. Because it's written in legalese for a certain reason, has to be that way. But, you know, with impeachment and prior consistent statement, all these, I wrote little sticky pads, and they helped me. And so I said, let me try to turn that into a book and try to put this to make it, try to simplify it. Because in my opinion, the rules of evidence are very complicated, but 90% of the time, you're using about 10% of the rules. You know, character evidence, impeachment, prior inconsistent statements, hearsay.
Right.
And so I always just try to understand the basic, the foundation of that. And if I happen to learn another rule in more detail later, that's great. But just knowing the foundation, because every judge, they don't, you know, you can get turned over on appeal, but you don't want to not know what you're talking about.
Right.
So I did the evidence.
And that never happens. All the judges that we've ever been in front of know exactly what they're talking about.
Except for the ones I've gotten reversed.
We love all of
them. Dane just got escorted out of the building by Dennison. Dennison has learned very quickly what you can say and what you cannot say about judges.
He even ripped off his shirt. We now see the tattoo. It's great.
I'm not calling anybody out.
No.
He's just saying to look up the opinions and you'll be able to see.
That I was
You're just going to write it down on a piece of paper and wave it in front of us.
Well, we know they're framed in Dane's house somewhere, so we don't need to look them up.
Sorry, go ahead.
So back to the everyday evidence. So I did the books. And
yes.
And then I said, well, why don't I just buy a website? And so they're actually cheaper than you would imagine. And I said, what about everydayevidence.com? And that was $3,000. And I said, how about everydayevidence.org? And and that was available for pretty cheap. And then I updated a few times. And then I said, well, I'm going to put a blog on here to try to get the, and Dane, you know, as a private attorney, the Google search and all that.
I kind of tracked yours through social media fairly quickly. I was like, it's a great idea. I think it's a great thing.
It's kind of the wave of the future. You know, you don't advertise in the phone books anymore. It's all about Google and the internet and word of mouth. And so the website kind of built, and I created a Twitter account because I'm not on Twitter or social media besides that. And so it's nice. But then I found the podcast, and then the rest is history. But, and then I started putting together some other books that had the rules of evidence for South Carolina. And I said, why don't I do the federal rules? And so I did that. I have the federal rules annotated for the Fourth Circuit. And then I also have a Fourth Amendment book, which is just a little handbook. And then I did a DUI one. And so I've given that to a couple attorneys who prosecuted DUIs and who defended DUIs to look over and say, what's right, what's wrong?
Right.
Because DUI is complicated. And just like the rules of evidence, I at least want to know the basics of what has to be videotaped, what doesn't, when does Miranda.
And the DUI case is so complicated based on the, you know, if you've never done one before, you don't realize how specific the statute is as far as the requirements.
Correct. And it's a lot of gray area. So the DUI it took a while, but I got that one together. And so it's been, we'll see if it's right or wrong. Who knows? No one tells me I'm wrong yet.
That doesn't
mean I'm not.
These are also available on Amazon, right?
These are all available on Amazon. And what is so easy that it's a pain actually putting a book together. I mean, if you click around enough on Microsoft Word, you can kind of figure it out, get the table of contents. Mm-hmm. And so another book I've done, or several, but I've compiled the rules, so it's not too complicated, but creating tables of contents within tables of contents, you know, that's the most important thing with rule books. And so that's what I've noticed. You have attorneys that, you know, using their phone, trying to find the rule, which is fine by me. I could, you know, that's the, you know, the new future is phones, but you can see how much of a pain it is to find a statute, to look up a statute. And so books will always be around, as Amber said, you know, books are enjoyable. And so that's the kind of point with the rules. What rules do you need? And try to put them all in one place.
And let's see what...
What goodies you brought.
And to be fair, when you self-publish, you can, as you find an error, as opposed to when you publish a book with the real publisher, they find all the errors and they say, fix all this, and it takes a long time. With me, I said, oh, first draft done, publishing, got a cool cover, let's put it out there. And then I'm like, oh, that's wrong. Publish again. Oh, that's wrong. So there have been about 5 different editions. So some of those editions could be in here. Okay. So don't quote these in court. You know, you might want to double check.
Okay.
So one of them is called the Fourth, and it's just Fourth Amendment law in South Carolina. So that will be...
Better have some of my cases.
No, this one's very basic. And then Denison can have one of those.
I will say, as we're kind of going through these, one of the things I noticed about your website is if I was a practitioner, if I was starting out in this profession, it basically, and I'm not saying this just because you're here, but I'm very serious about this. It's almost like if you just get kind of one of those books on each of them, it kind of covers everything. And I swear I'm not just kissing your butt here, but these are things that, you know, you talked about solicitors needing the rule books and needing people in court, you know, and in front of you. If you don't have that easily accessible and you don't know it, that's something that you can very easily, you know, be deficient on and miss. And it seems like if I had some of these books, it kind of would help out.
Joseph, that's why I'm here. to give you what you need. Thank you for the plug.
Yeah,
don't worry, you're getting plenty of free books.
You're not getting that
Okay, go ahead.
No. This one I have to give to Denison because this is one of the early ones. So don't use this as study for any. But this one is called Everyday Evidence Federal Court. And what it does is it explains the rules of evidence in a very simplistic kind of way and the categories. And what I focus on too is, and the reason I call it everyday evidence is because it's the kind that you use in, not on exams or in trials, but in trials. And then when you have an objection, you have to be quick.
Sure.
And then as soon as someone, you know, says something objectionable, you have to kind of know idea where is it? Is it hearsay? Is it impeachment? Is it character? And it's kind of get you, as I describe it, you have the forest, get you into the right forest. And that way you don't sound, you know, for me personally, I don't sound like an idiot.
Right.
And that way, if I happen to get to the right tree, then that just makes me look even better. But that's not the goal. So it's, so Dennis can have that one. Just if you fail an exam, then.
Yeah.
That's all right. I appreciate it.
Disclaimer.
Right. Denison is.
Well, Denison, he's the editor-in-chief
of Law Review. I feel like he's got this, but, you know.
He's got his stuff together.
This is great. His grades were better than.
All of ours.
Yeah.
That's why we had to start.
And I have to give a shout out to my wife, who's a 3L in law school, Kristen Coble. She's on Law Review. She's smarter than anybody. Graduating soon. So
keep it coming. Keep it coming.
I'm like Joseph with the books over
here. Yeah, that's right.
Do you let her edit the books? You really should.
She does. She won the award for the best. I can't remember what the name of the award.
Spade every single one.
She is a great spader, and then it's so good that I say no, I don't want it that good. Okay, just
right.
I want to keep it kind of blue collar with the blue book.
So you heard it here first. Judge Coble saying his wife is too good for him and the best, and has done very well for these books.
As a matrimonial lawyer, you just made a very good.
That's
book.
Right.
I've learned from the best. And the next, so I tried the everyday evidence and then pocket prelims and then deconstructing the DUI. I tried to make it catchy. The fourth was as good as I could get on that one.
Right.
So deconstructing the DUI, it breaks down, you can see I used this in court the other day. It breaks down the basic, what driving under the influence is, goes from the, and the way I see it in any, when you're handling a motion as a judge, it goes from point A to point Z. And so it goes from, you know, what is driving under the influence, goes to the stop, the incident site, the breath test, directed verdict, that whatever that the standard for that, penalties, and I have all the main case law in here.
So,
Teamer, Hinkle, Sachinsky.
So if you're a law student or somebody that's gotten a DUI case and you've never gone through it before, this would be a good first start.
No, a good first start would Google Dane Phillips attorney.
Oh, no, I'm not talking about somebody that arrested for DUI. Yeah. I'm not a brand new lawyer.
Yes, it'll be great. Right. It's what it's when I started on the bench, I'd handled DUIs, but usually when you handle DUIs in general sessions, it's associated with something else more serious, and you plead out the DUI or you and they plead to a more serious charge. So handling DUIs, it was, you know, a tidal wave of information, and so it's for me, and I'm still learning DUIs. I'm still trying to figure out the law and you know, 25, whichever section it is. I can't.
And it's ever changing.
It's always, yep. There's always something new to it. And it's a very serious charge. And I think I need to be always more, I always need to be more prepared and understanding. And so that's what, that helps me out with that. The next one is the rules of evidence, South Carolina rules of evidence annotated. So Jack Swerling had a book and it hasn't been updated in a while, but he, you know, Jack Swerling, it's, and y'all need to have him as a guest if y'all haven't
already.
He's probably, you know, one of the most preeminent trial lawyers, and he knows the rules of evidence to the back of his hand. And there, when I was in the solicitor's office, all the older attorneys had his little rules of evidence book, but it hadn't been
updated. Red book, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
And so it hadn't been updated in a while. And, you know, there's Crawford and a lot new. There's a few new updates to the rules of evidence. And so and there are other evidence books out there that are great by Justin Kahn. And so this book, though, I just try to make it as simple and easy as possible. So just about every single rule either has a brief explanation and then case law. And so that way you can at least quote. So, and when with case law, a lot of times case law can be complicated and a little bit too nitty gritty. But I try to find a piece of the case that said, explain, this is what it means and this is why it means it.
Sure.
And so that if you quote some, it's not just some random 1800 statute. It actually hopefully means something. So,
and if the judge asked you a question, you could actually respond.
We are going to actually respond to it.
We are going to be fighting over these books after you leave.
I'll let y'all figure it out.
The ginger should get the orange book.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you go to Clemson or this?
No,
they have rules of evidence.
That actually is not orange. I had a book that was orange, but I changed it because I knew people would be offended
Be offended by it.
So I didn't do Clemson orange.
That is true.
And Joseph is making bad noises over
here.
No one is paying.
I just don't do federal, so that's why.
Anybody do federal?
I'll take federal.
Well, I got two of these, so both of y'all. It's federal rules of evidence is just the same as.
Perfect.
But it has the federal rules, and it's for the Fourth Circuit. So it's case law either from the United States Supreme Court, the Fourth Circuit, or districts within the Fourth Circuit.
Cool.
So hopefully nothing's wrong in there, but I can't promise you that.
Sweet. Thank you.
And then this is a...
We need to have more guests to bring us gifts. This is the best.
Well, the funny thing is these have been sitting in the back of my car forever because I thought that people would want them, and nobody wants them.
No,
so,
because you were waiting for us to have you on. That's what...
They didn't want to take a gift from a judge.
That's right.
They didn't want to take a gift from a judge.
And now you make it sound like I'm bribing people. this book, Traffic Court in South Carolina, Offenses and Definitions. And so when you're sitting on the bench, Title 56 is gigantic. It's complicated. And, you know, what is the definition of rolling at a stop sign? And then
failure to yield
or a collision case. What are all those involved? And then you have a definition. You have so many different definitions. So I went through Title 56 and it's all Title 56, I believe, and found every definition. And so, for instance, moped throughout the entire section 56 has three different definitions. And so it has the definition and which section for offense it's found under. That way you know which one to find. And so you got gross weight has 100 different definitions. And then you have the actual offenses, failure to yield left turn, failure to yield pedestrian. And so I used Terry Leverett of Court Administration. I used, he puts together a list of all of them. So that's why he and I are co-authors of this book. And it's it might help you in traffic court one day.
Sweet.
Or not.
You're like Mary Poppins with that box.
Yeah.
If it's sitting in my car forever. And so
I like this one.
This is what I just copied a bunch of rules and put it in a book, and I made a decent cover. So
there you go. But tell them the name of the book.
Court Rules of South Carolina, a compilation of legal rules, 2019. And so there are a lot of these books and they have a lot of annotations, and so that can be helpful. Sometimes you just want the rules. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're always in a weird order. So I did these in order of, I don't want to say importance because family court is not at the top, but the most important.
Politician already. He's ready.
But the most important.
It's almost like it's in his blood.
I don't know where I would get that from.
I don't know.
You got evidence, civil procedure, criminal procedure, magistrate court, family court, probate court, ADR, and e-filing. So
sweet.
And hopefully, and so this one, the table of contents isn't as good as the other one. So I need to update that table of contents. And the final one is Civil Rules of Magistrate's Court. So there are a lot of different, and by the way, my wife asked me about Magistrate's Court and, you know, should it be an apostrophe, should it be capitalized? The actual rules of Magistrate Court have it spelled that way, so I'm just going with them.
Right.
I could be wrong, but
purple and gold.
Go Panthers. That's what I was going for. I was trying to, at least.
Wait, who's purple and gold?
Batesburg, Leesville, Joseph.
Somebody from Batesburg, Leesville's listening. Y'all don't have
You're going to get an angry
shut
tweet
your mouth.
As soon as this plays.
About
when Sonya Carey listens to this podcast.
Dan's relationship with judges on the bench's mind with the people of Batesburg.
I love our judges.
Yeah, sure.
Dane married a woman with Batesburg, Leesville ties.
Sounds like he needs to get on the microphone and correct that.
That's right. We'll cut all this out, too.
For that one, he'll get the purple and you need to describe that to your wife.
Yes.
So that has the landlord-tenant restraining order, the kind of random civil rules that you might find in there, and it has good table of contents. So you can help quickly find the rules.
Awesome. You mentioned, that's a lot of books.
I know, I'm sad. Like, the box is empty now.
And y'all are going to have to share.
Yeah, we'll share with some. Like, we'll
look at Dennison. He's so excited over there. Yeah. Because think about the law. You know what you pay for books.
Right.
So don't get used to getting a free book ever again.
I mean, and on his spring break. So, I mean, he's getting educated on his spring break. Congratulations.
Right, yeah, thank you.
I know
congratulations
that's exactly
or condolences. I don't know.
Something like that.
He just got back from New York. Don't feel too bad for him.
Yeah, that's true.
We're all jealous.
So my next question is, so you're on the bench now. You're a judge. You mentioned something that I want you to kind of go into about your first time using the gavel. Yes.
So, you know, you watch movies and you see judges and you, as a lawyer, you watch judges and they always have it together. They always have a quick, you know, comeback and everyone respects them. And so, you know, that's, that's what I always hoped it would be like. And so at one point in some traffic court I was holding, someone was yelling and just being a little bit over the top. And so there's always a gavel sitting in every, we have 9 courtrooms. There's a gavel in every courtroom. And, you know, I always thought it was there for decoration. So, you know, I say, you know, I'm going to use this and bring order to my court. And so I grab it and I swing it down as hard as I can, ready for this, you know, thunderous noise to bring the room to attention. And it's kind of a little dink and everyone, no one says anything. The clerks kind of look up and like, did you mean to do that? Or was that an accident? I should have just taken a recess and called it a day at that point. And so, I've learned not to use the gavel, and I asked them politely if they could take it outside, and usually that works.
Next time, do like a spoon on the glass.
That's right.
It needs something else.
So one of the things, I mean, being a younger lawyer, prosecutor now in the judiciary, what's the one thing that you, when you became a judge, that you didn't quite see that you were going to have to face on a day in and day out basis?
The making a decision is a lot harder than I thought it would be. Even for a simple, you know, people always have bench trials, a trial that day where I just decide for a case as simple as, you know, running a stop sign. And you would just think you know, it's just you're guilty, you're not guilty. But it's surprisingly making a decision.
A quick decision
right then and there is not as easy as I thought it was. And so. So I can't imagine what, you know, circuit court judges, general sessions, compleas, what the pressure that they are under. family court judges, all judges, the pressure that they are under to quickly make an accurate and fair decision that's going to get whoever you rule against is going to be mad. Mm-hmm. They're going to think you are wrong. And all you can do is try to make your best judgment call, knowing that there are other judges above you who might say you are wrong or right. But seeing how other judges have done it is very impressive once you actually get there and actually have to make a decision. Some of the best things that happened to me as a young prosecutor was we were talking about a public defender who would, as a young prosecutor, you're, you know, a little whippersnapper, you're ready to go and just put everybody in jail and do justice. And then it takes about 2 weeks of that before you make a public defender mad and they put you in your place real quick. And that happened to me plenty of times. And it was great to happen to me because it would kind of show you that there's another side to the story. Sure. And that you don't know what you're doing. You know, you just started. And so having public defenders, private attorneys kind of whip you into shape and humble you was a big benefit before taking the bench. And so that would be my advice to any young attorney is you're going to get a talking to, and it's probably the best thing to happen. Otherwise, you want that to happen. You want to be put in your place and be right. humbled as much as possible.
Our new segment for season 2 is called War Stories. We ask all of our guests to see if they have a specific or funny, poignant story from their practice. We've asked you to think about it. Do you have one?
You know, usually when people ask about war stories, you never, ever say them to a microphone. Right?
True, yeah.
You
true.
Never say that. But
you should call them all Bob.
They're just, yeah. These are just good stories.
Good stories. You know, they're all with an asterisk. Of course. You know, yeah.
Well, I was thinking about that when Dennison emailed me, and I was, you know, every day in magistrate court is something new, something different, something unique, because people come there with problems that need to be solved. And they're good people, and they just need an answer to their question a lot of times, and it's always interesting. But the one unique thing about being a magistrate judge is that magistrates set 99% of bonds. So you deal with bond court, and that also means you're not just in jails, but you're in the Department of Corrections. You have to set bonds on prisoners. So about every other month, I have to go out to the Department of Corrections out in Broad River. I know, Dane, you go to all these different prisons, and
everyone knows.
Dane wants to talk on some bonds.
I forgot to check in Lexington this afternoon. Oh, God.
It'll never happen again. You'll make it up for it, I promise.
Dane and his bonds. I'm sure you could go. I bet you got plenty of war stories there. But so when you go out to the Department of Corrections to set bond, there are about three levels of security for dealing with the inmates. You have the low, middle, and then high security. And so you would think that it would be the high would be making the most nervous, and then it would go down. But the high security, you're in death row. You go into Kirkland. You got to go through two things of security. It's like an international flight. Mm-hmm. And you have to go through they buzz you in. You go through a gate. They let you out. The inmate, they do three at a time behind the closed locked doors. And, you know, they're in there for very, very serious stuff.
Right.
But that's fine because they're locked away. And if anything were to happen, which has happened before, you know that the worst would be they might spit through the metal door, and so that can make you nervous. But then as you go down, you have the medium security, which is you're in a kind of like an auditorium room, and it's two guards to an inmate. They have their ankles locked, they have their hands locked to their waist, and they're on an actual leash. And so that makes you kind of nervous, but you know that you could probably run
a little bit.
There's
folks there, yeah.
Yeah, there's stuff going on. But then you go to the low security, and they're just sitting there with one security guard, you know, one officer, and they might be handcuffed. No, they're not handcuffed. They're just sitting across the table from you.
Right.
And so you gotta, you know, they can make you a little nervous if you're if you're not Dane. Dane's used to this.
Right. I'm in a room, it doesn't matter what security level, they send me right into harm's way. The thing is, though, they're not handcuffed.
You're supposed to be on their side. Sometimes they don't like the judge.
Yeah.
Especially when you're
sitting. They have different ideas about you versus.
Especially if I set a tough bond or one they don't appreciate. But normally, with the lower security, it's because they're about to get out. So they only have a few more months left, or it's nothing. And they caught a charge in there, or they had some old warrants for shopliftings. And so they're just ready to get out. They don't want to do anything to mess up their release date, which is right around the corner. But every now and then you'll have some folks who are looking at 30, 40 life in prison. So I had one the other day, other month, and he was in there for murder. And it was just me, the clerk, him, an officer, and it, you know, makes you kind of nervous because they have what do they have to lose? Not much. But so he was friendly. I set a bond. Nothing. It was all fine. And they just bring over, you know, about a dozen inmates at a time, and they just come in one at a time to this little room with no exit. And so after about halfway through of set bonds, I had to use the restroom. So I walk out there, and then all 12 or so, including the guy of murder who I just set his bond, are just sitting out there, and they're right outside the bathroom door. And I kind of look around. I say, anybody seen the restroom? And they point it right across the hall. I say, thanks. And so I walk in, and they're all just sitting there. And the officer just, you know, right down the hall. It's nothing.
Right.
So I'm sitting there pretty nervous. And
can't
I'm
go to the bathroom.
I'm trying. And all I can think is that this is, if something were to happen, this is where I'm gonna get killed.
Yeah, the bathroom.
But then I had two thoughts go through my head. I say, well, if something does happen, and you know this is my last day, they'll at least name a courthouse or a courtroom after me.
That's
you
true.
Know?
Mm-hmm. That's true.
But then I think they'll probably just name this bathroom after me. And then I'm just picturing my family coming and laying a wreath right outside the door. And I'm thinking, this is not going
to
be good.
After getting strip-searched.
Yeah, that's not the way to go.
So luckily, I nothing happened. The guys were nice, and they didn't kill me that day, and I set the rest of the bonds. But setting bonds is probably more interesting, as Dane well knows, and Joseph, you've seen it before. Yeah. It's that's right when people get arrested, and that's right when stuff is happening. So
and while they're presumed innocent.
They're always presumed innocent until the very end, Dane.
Yourself.
No. He is so gleeful.
I know.
I wish we just had a camera on Dane's face. He's
we
so
need
happy.
If one day, we're going to have the episode, it's just going to be called Bonds. We don't need to show up. It's just going to be Dane talking about Bonds.
I knew I shouldn't have brought up Bonds.
Yeah, why see, that's your problem.
Why we got a limit?
Well, other than that, Judge Cope, we certainly appreciate you being here. Remember, you can find these books. And again, we're not just talking because we like Judge Coble and he brought us gifts.
This isn't a paid advertisement.
Yeah,
we didn't know the gifts were coming in advance.
Thank you.
I was smart to do that, wasn't it?
Yes. It's very well done. You can find these books at everydayevidence.org. We know that Judge Coble's on social media.
Amazon.
You can also find them on Amazon. Mm-hmm. On social media, Everyday Evidence on Twitter.
Correct.
You can find him there. And again, in all seriousness, if you need a good rules of evidence book, I teach mock trial. These are the type of things that get from my students and have them look over, because you want to be able to explain, you know, some hoity-toity law stuff to somebody who maybe doesn't have an idea of how to do it. So we certainly appreciate you coming. You can follow him at Everyday Evidence. You can follow Amber at Red Judicata, Dane at SC Crim Lawyer. Drop him a line. Ask him about bonds. He'll love to talk about it. And then you can follow me at Joseph P. Bias. You can follow the podcast at SC Law Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We're going to have Judge Coble sign one of these books, and we'll figure out some way to give away
a
Federal Rules of Evidence book to somebody who wants one.
As long as they promise, once you find an error, let me know. Don't just tweet it out and say that Coble guy's an idiot. Right. Let me know and then tweet that out.
That's right. All right. So we'll have them sign that disclaimer. we'll just put a lot of disclaimers into this pod. So anyway, for Dennison, our editor-in-chief intern team member, for Brendy, for Amber, for Dane, for Judge Coble, and for me, thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. Take care.
Buy these books.